just to paint a picture for everybody tuning in, David Hutchison has changed the angle of his camera, and it has us absolutely wowed. Woody and I can't get over the different background. It's unbelievable what we're being exposed to right now. Darren Millard on In Goal Radio, the podcast presented by The Hockey Shop, source for sports Langley, thehockeyshop.com, with the co-founders of In Goal Magazine, Kevin Woodley and David Hutchison. Hutch, tell us about this decision to turn the camera on a different angle, because we're looking at things we've never seen before in the background. Different pads, different jerseys, different shelves, things on the shelf, equipment.
I don't know. I'm just a little worried because now I look at it and my head's sort of sideways. And instead of just seeing the front of my nose, you can see how big it is now. So it's a good thing we're not going on video.
I didn't even know you had a nose.
Well,
I was just going to say, I didn't know you had a good side.
Smoke and mirrors, boys.
Brilliant. It reminds me of censoring in a way. All the different angles, all the different looks that you can have with censoring, NHL censoring VR.
Sure can. And Sensorena, which we've told you is an awesome thing to dig into for the spring. And Darren, I told you last week to dig into the neurocognitive stuff. How did that go?
I did it. I was just hanging out, maybe like on the side of the bed. And my wife said, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just going through this list of activities. It's like, are you stopping pucks again? I'm like, no, I'm doing this. And then I couldn't think of the name. It's some kind of cognitive thing that, and it's neurocognitive, right?
Sure, that sounds good. It sounds fancy, right, so I'm going with it.
It was fun. It was a cool thing to do, and then she left. I didn't know she'd left, and I was talking to her for about 10 minutes and not realizing that I was alone in the room.
So many tools in Sensorena that you can even use it safely in bed in the evening. But there's even bigger news from our friends at Sensorena this week, guys. NHL Sensorena, by the way, is the official name now, is becoming the first ever interactive NHL VR platform to hit Meta's most widely used and curated VR app store. Until now, you've had to install Sensorena through their app lab, which is, I don't want to say experimental, but not the easiest way to get a hold of things, not as curated, not as sort of recognized by Meta, the people who own Quest. But now in the main Meta store, in your headset, you can go and grab Sensorena. Much easier, much more convenient. And they've added a Game Pass option. So if somebody wants to just give it a go for a day, you can buy a Game Pass on Sensorena now. Check it out. See what you think of it before you decide if, as most InGoal listeners, I would think, you want to invest in an annual pass to make Sensorena part of your training. So if you're interested in Sensorena for this year, for this spring, to add to your routine this summer so you can become a better goalie for next year, go grab it now. Details at Sensorena.com, but you can go into the main MetaQuest store to grab Sensorena now, guys.
Do you have an option on NHL Sensorena to pop into Hutch's office and to be able to do a 360?
Well, we should talk to them about maybe making this the new venue. Yes. There's all these beautiful outdoor venues, Winter Classic, all that sort of stuff. Hutch's office. I might have to clean up before they bring in the cameras. But yeah, I'd be willing to do that, boys.
I'm excited about that. And we could do Woody's office, with the jerseys and the sticks in the background. I think there's something here.
I feel I'm being mocked here.
No, like, you're not. Woody, gotta be perfectly honest with you. Woody has all
these Olympic and World Championship framed signed jerseys in the background. You've got a beautiful mask collection, and I've got a couple of old jerseys hung on the bookshelf.
What did we talk about before we started recording? Was your new background, and I thought you were in a different spot, like a different location, in fact.
Well, yeah.
So it's legit.
You changed our reality. Boys.
Perception is reality now with Hutch. Why are you so awkward and uncomfortable talking about yourself?
Don't know. Because I'm a hockey player. You're not supposed to talk about yourself. But I do. I just want to thank the boys for getting the pucks in deep. Guys were back checking hard tonight. They just like without you guys, I couldn't bring it to this show. So, yeah.
We've got a conversation that I want to dive into about a goalie rotation in the playoffs. It looks like it's going to happen on one front and maybe two, and there's going to be some ham and egging going on as other teams bounce back and forth. Are we closer to it being a normal occurrence, or how many years do you think it takes before we get to goalie rotation being widely accepted and just one of your normal options. I want to get into that in just a little bit. We've also got the gear segment brought to you by the Hockey Shop, going through some neck protection. Yuri Patera is our NHL Sensei Arena feature interview, and he's playing in the American Hockey League right now with the Henderson Silver Knights. Spent the last parts of the last 2 years up with the Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights, and this is a fun interview because he just oozes passion and fun and electricity. It's really cool, and one of the great stories is about Woody has with him. It was about his dad when he found out that he was going to be a goalie. So a lot to get to today.
Lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff. But first, I think we need to give people a little heads up. It's still almost 2 months away. But before we get into today's stuff, June 15th, this is a save the dater from our friends at the Hockey Shop. Tendy Fest 6 is on at the Fleetwood Ice Rink Community Center in Surrey, British Columbia, not too far from their store in Langley. Me and Hutch checked it out. Great facility. Couple of sheets there. I think they're actually going to have three sheets of ice, 1 to 5 p.m., June 15th at Fleetwood. We talk all about the deals that they have at the Hockey Shop, how they're the best place to go to get the latest and the greatest, and this is the best time of year at Tendy Fest to go take it on the ice. Hockey Shop has a great demo program, so you can always typically go there and try gear, take it out, try it. But this is the time to get on the ice in multiple different sets on the same day. So make sure you save that date. If you can come join us, we'll be there. Tendy Fest, 1 to 5 p.m. at the Fleetwood Ice Rink in Surrey on June 15th. We hope to see you out.
Could work out perfectly. The Stanley Cup was awarded June 13th last year. So June 15th will be should be on the heels of the Stanley Cup playoffs wrapping up, and who knows in the Lower Mainland what that that means to hockey fans there.
We'll send the in goal PJ down to pick you up, Darren. Please, after you finish hoisting the cup this year for the second straight year, we'll have you whisked up here on the private jet.
Tell me about the loaner program, the demo program, and do you think you have to be right there to pick it up? I wonder if they can, if Can can ship it if you're in Calgary and you want to try it.
We've dealt with the shipping of gear because we do a lot of testing and we get a lot of requests from, I mean, it's the, especially the way shipping is now, it's well over $100 just to ship it each way. So you'd be looking at a couple $100 just to ship it back and forth in Canada. So definitely not that, but if you're in the Lower Mainland, and I would suggest if you're, you know, even near, like even like an hour and a half outside, you know, we certainly know people from the States that have come up, and maybe you're coming up for a camp, you reach out to the guys at the Hockey Shop, reach out to Cam and his crew, because there might be an opportunity there. Say you're coming up for a goalie camp for a week in the Lower Mainland, something you can investigate with them. Can you take it out for a day and give it a try and, you know, see if it's for you? Because, you know, hey, let's face it, gear's expensive. So try before you buy is a great way to do it. And as I said, June 15th at Tendy Fest is definitely the best opportunity to try new gear before you buy for next season.
I can't wait to get into the gear segment dealing with neck protection, where I get to mock Hutch and Woody. Even though it's not the danglers, I'm still going to mock Hutch and Woody about their ambivalence towards protecting themselves and taking care of themselves. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, the parent segment, one of the great additions to In Goal Radio, the podcast. And today is something that not everybody has to worry about, but is a very significant decision in your journey if you are one lucky enough to be, or fortunate enough, have worked hard enough to be an elite goaltender.
So I'm just going to, I don't want to say take exception with that, Darren, but maybe disagree just slightly. And the reason that we brought in today's question, at what age does my son or daughter need an agent? The reason we brought it in is because so many young goaltenders at a much younger age than you would think, Darren, start getting emails, texts, approached in rinks, telling them that their kid needs an agent. Because there's a lot of folks out there that are trying to drum up business. I got one, gosh, Matt, he was 10 or 11. I got an email, guys, from a former professional official turned agent who was basically trying to scare me into signing with him, telling my kid wouldn't have any opportunities, wouldn't be able to play the game at a high level unless he signed as with this guy as an agent at a ridiculously young age. And because of that, I get all kinds of emails from parents asking, you know, when did Maddie get an agent? When did you guys decide to go with somebody? What do I do? My kid's been approached. There is a lot of questions out there from people, far more than you think. So we thought it would be great to get an answer to that. So we went to an expert, and that's Ray Petko of Alpha Sports, who happens to represent Matthew. And we asked him that question and got him to give us his thoughts. Just before we head into the segment, though, guys, I want to say a couple of things. One is, we talk about agent, but we don't really get into the question of agent versus advisor. If you are headed down the NCAA route, if you want to go to college to maintain your eligibility, you cannot have an agent. You must pay an advisor to answer your questions and represent you. They are not a commissioned agent. They're not somebody who has the chance to make money off of your kid at some point down the line. They're just there to offer advice. And in the interview, we even talk about it being mandatory to pay an advisor. And it is if you want to maintain your NCAA eligibility. There's a minimum amount that they actually tell these agents that they have to charge if kids want to maintain their eligibility, or so I am told. In the discussion today, Ray talks about, as I already have, there are a number of unscrupulous folks out there that are charging.
Easy for me to say.
Charging $10,000 and more to represent kids. And you do need to be careful and be wary about those folks. What I do want to say that doesn't come up in the discussion, guys, the parent segment is presented by the Stop It You app that, Darren, I know you've been digging into. Stop It Goaltending actually provides an advising service. And it was 100% coincidental that Brian DeCord and I had a chat this week, and he was telling me about this service, and it actually fits beautifully with this discussion, because Brian also doesn't like that there's people out there charging kids $5,000-$10,000 to represent them. So they offer an advising service. He has a full-time advisor on staff, and it's done only as a monthly commitment. It is significantly less. I think he said it was $180 a month. And they will be your advisor. They will help you in team placement. They will help you with all the questions that you have around that. It's a real nice middle ground for people who need some support, need some experience, but don't really want to go down that full route that we talk about in today's discussion. So Stop It You, the app, is a fantastic place to go for all your resources as a goaltender. But also, if you have questions about an advisor, maybe your kid's a little bit younger, maybe your kid's not a little bit younger, you're just trying to sort this all out for yourself, Stop It's a great place to go, guys.
Yeah, hey, and before we get to Ray Petko, Stop It, you're right, Hutch. The world's most comprehensive app for goalies, goalie parents, and goalie coaches. They've got multiple tiers, multiple levels. They now also include a membership to In Goal Magazine, In Goal Premium, as part of your purchase at Stop It app, so you can get the best of both worlds, everything we bring you at In Goal and everything that the Stop It Goaltending You app brings. Couple of quick ones this week. Daily primers included Think Like a Messiah, Not Like a Victim. One of their quick videos, a new content, was a goalie power pep talk and how to get confidence, a nice little 5-minute video on how to give yourself confidence heading into a game or a practice or a tryout, and a full video, their goalie extra this week on spring tournaments. They spent 20 minutes breaking that down. Just a handful of the many options that can help you become a better goaltender available at the Stop It Goaltending You app.
Awesome stuff. Here is Hutch with Ray Petko talking about the agency side of our journey on In Goal Radio, the podcast.
Okay, I'm here for a very quick conversation today with Ray Petko of Alpha Hockey. Full disclosure, Ray has been a good personal friend for many years and does represent my son, Matthew, who you've heard about on the podcast before. But this is a more generic question. We're not recruiting for Alpha Hockey. In fact, I think, Ray, you probably work with a pretty select clientele. But the generic question here for the day is, when does my son or daughter need an agent or advisor?
Yes, I get that question all the time, as you can imagine. I get it via phone call, in person, email, text, through friends. I hear it all the time. And so it's a different answer for almost everyone, of course, because
oh, great. It's not easy.
It's not easy. No.
Yeah.
So sometimes a player needs an agent as young as, and it almost pains me to say this, but almost at 14, that's possible, where players need an agent at that point for the really higher end players. But
is that because you're heading into the CHL draft ages?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Now, my opinion is not, and this may upset some people in our industry, because there are a lot of agencies whose their revenue is based on a billing where they charge young players a set fee, and it's sometimes that's where the lines get blurred a little bit as to who needs an agent and who doesn't. It's almost there are some agencies, and maybe not the more reputable ones, where they will take anyone who's willing to pay a fee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do advise against that for the most part. There are some good ones who are doing that. But I think it's very important to start by saying, look for an NHLPA certified agency. If the end goal is to play professional hockey, and most kids in this country and others, of course, your listeners and viewers are everywhere. If the end goal is to play in the NHL, you need an NHLPA certified agent. That is the first question, or the first thing I would check. And you can check the NHL certified agent list on the NHLPA website, nhlpa.com.
Okay.
Extremely important. I've seen too many players get bad advice from people who seem to have credentials, but they actually don't. They're not certified. And in fact, there are some in the business right now operating. It appears as though they may be certified based on what they say, but they aren't. And I'm sorry to kind of go off into that rabbit hole, but it's an important thing to discuss when discussing agents. And of course, it's usually the first contacts for players and families with agents, and they don't know these things. So, but with the age, with young players who are looking at the Bantam draft, they, without a doubt, almost all of them need advice. They need some guidance. And I should clarify, there are some of the agencies who are charging a fee, and it's legit and it's fine. It's mm-hmm. They're not all out to take advantage. In fact, few are out to take advantage of families, but there are those. And so it's important to look out for that. But as far as hiring an agent, unless the player is likely to be a higher pick who is going to be asked to sign fairly quickly after the draft,
mm-hmm.
Really all they need is advice. And you can get advice from a lot of great people in the game. Often I recommend talking to a trusted coach. Maybe a family who's been through it, maybe mom or dad of a player who knows kind of the ins and outs based on their experience. They could give advice. There's a lot of ways. There's a lot of information online, but that's not all accurate, unfortunately. So talking to a trusted current coach, former coach. Maybe just if a family is in the game and there are some people who they know who are scouts, and it's maybe hard to find unbiased people in certain situations, that can happen. But I would say, like, the average player who, even if they're going to be drafted in the Western League or OHL, Q, or wherever it might be, a mid-round pick, they don't really need an agent for the most part. And yet, if they get an agent, at least wait until you are at that point where you're going to be drafted, or it's very likely you will be drafted, because at that point a team may present you with a contract, and once you are asked to sign a contract in major junior especially, you really should have someone look over that and advise you of the rights that you have and don't have if you sign that. Currently there are of course two major paths in hockey, junior hockey, for mostly Canadian players, which is the CHL and Junior A, or mm-hmm. the BCHL level now, which is technically not Junior A. It's kind of its own new thing.
Its own beast, yeah.
Right. And so the NCAA path, of course, follows that for a lot of those players. And that looks like it may change. And that's an entirely different topic, but it's a big one.
We'll come back to you.
Yeah, sure. So there are a lot of those types of things where families, especially if they haven't been around the game for a long time, it's okay at that point to start having those conversations. I have a lot of conversations with players and families that are what I just call no strings attached. It may be a situation where I'm not even really interested in representing this player simply because for us, we're a small group and we don't recruit a lot of players. I really want to make sure that the players we recruit will require the services of an NHL agent in the future. And others who are set up maybe where their focus is more helping players with NCAA scholarships and things like that. And that's where the fees come in. And those are okay where that's the goal. They will
not just okay. Am I not right that they're required if you're
actually
NCAA?
Yes, exactly. That's required at this point, and that's changed over the years. We went from not being able to invoice players to it becoming mandatory. If the goal is to play NCAA hockey or if they are currently in NCAA hockey. So, and I'm sure all of that ends up sounding fairly confusing for some listeners who are not familiar with this. And they're like, well, you have all these things that you're saying, but why shouldn't we hire an agent? It's just that advice is necessary for pretty much everyone. Especially where there's just not a lot of knowledge in the family about it. But to lock in with an agent at a very young age, I always prefer that it's if for the players that we sign, and full disclosure, we have one 15-year-old client right now. And then we have very few players in each draft year. Usually it's one or two, but 15 being our youngest, and he's likely going to be a first round draft pick in the Western League draft here, and could be a top 10, but we're not sure yet, of course. And those are the types of players where there's a big benefit to having an agent at that point. I always get back to, you know, how do you decide if you need that advice? If you just can't get advice through family, friends, or a former coach, and you should be able to get advice from a coach, that shouldn't be that difficult, right? There's so many great people in this game. And at that point, maybe it's okay to make contact. I mean, anytime it's okay to make contact with an agent, but I would just be careful not to jump at the first agent that someone speaks with. I usually request anyone that we're interested in signing as a client, I prefer they have conversations with other agents as well, just so they understand the different, first of all, personalities, but also different maybe specialties or areas of extra interest for one agency compared to another one. And to have a good fit is obviously very important, because this is someone who will end up working very closely with at times personal matters as well in a player's life.
For sure.
So it's just something that I see a lot of people rush into. Young players have an agent approach them or the family, and it's exciting. They look around, and you know, they all know other players who have agents at a young age. And you know, sometimes there's a few things involved. Maybe there's a camp, or some players get sticks from their agents and things like that. They get excited. There's that
fear of missing out.
Yeah, right. Yes. And
but there's a related question, Ray, if I may. I think there's a lot of fear, and some of it put on to people just by the rumor mill, some probably by some less experienced agents trying to recruit clients. But there's that fear: if I don't have an agent, I won't get drafted. Or if I have an agent, I might get drafted higher,
right?
Even to the point of I won't get on a good team
Right.
You know, maybe even at the midget level, people are worried if they don't have representation. You can't really affect much of that as an agent, can you?
But what I find is that as a whole, agents, and I have been guilty of this myself in the past, and I try to be very honest with myself as well as others, of course, what we can affect, what type of you know, where is our value? And a lot of times in our industry, we overhype what we can do in a draft. To be very honest, there's not that. There's some maybe draft manipulation, if you want to call it that. There's some of that, but an agent isn't going to be the difference between a player going in the first round and the eighth round. Mm-hmm. Every team at the junior level has a paid scouting staff, and now paid. They're not all paid. Some of them are volunteer, and others are paid. But they are putting literally hundreds of hours into scouting and watching hockey. There are services that are not affiliated with teams in junior hockey who provide scouting services. And they are usually paid scouts as well. These are often at least smart hockey people who are watching. They are paid to watch. It is their job to know who's out there. Players don't really get missed anymore. It's exciting to see players develop late, but they, unless a player was playing in some league, obscure league that is maybe a much lower level, it's pretty hard to miss a player these days with the amount of scouts who are out there watching almost at every level at this point.
And you probably can't just phone up an OHL general manager and say, I know little Jimmy's playing in an obscure league that nobody's ever seen. You should draft him. I don't think that guy's going to draft him.
He's not going to draft him. He might.
Might get invited to a camp or something.
Might get invited to a camp. He might send a scout out. In all likelihood, they would just have somebody log on to the internet.
Yes, and watch it.
And they'd watch a video. Well, they'd watch film on this player. And usually that's where it would stop because, again, players haven't been missed for the most part. And the draft manipulation, yes, there are times when you call a team or two, or you have a list of teams that are your preferred destination. You have the opposite where this player doesn't want to go for whatever reason. It's not something I love doing. I hate calling a GM and saying, look, this player that I know you've been watching and are interested in, doesn't, if you draft him, he's not going to come. He won't sign. And I've been told off in a phone call like that, where the GM said, you know, basically it's an F you. If we want to pick it, we will. And if he doesn't want to sign, he doesn't have to, but you know, where else is he going to go? That isn't very common, but I've called teams in the past and said, you know, for whatever reason, and you have to do it as respectfully as possible, but you're telling a GM something they don't want to hear. Mm-hmm. And you're saying this player won't come if you draft him. And the way I've approached it is I really just want to save you the headache of drafting a player who won't come. And usually it's because their choice is to play NCAA hockey and they're going to go that route. But occasionally, and I've been honest with GMs, occasionally it's just the family's decided, no, our son's not going to go there. And when he's 18, maybe, but till he's at that age, we won't allow him to play that far away from home is often the case.
Sure.
Where it's too far. And a family has every right to do that. And sometimes you have to make those difficult calls, but that's where some draft manipulation can happen. But as far as affecting,
but it's not a case of you need to have an agent if you want to get drafted.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And to go to camp after the draft and outside of some of the top picks that a team would use a first or second round pick, outside of that, I usually recommend not signing until you have a roster spot on that team, because you just never know what will happen. So that's not a hard set rule that I have, but it's a little bit of a guideline. Why would you sign? And I know what a team says why they would want a player to sign early. But for me, I like to have my options open as long as possible with something like, where am I going to play? So I like to have players sign only once they have a roster spot offered, not a tryout, not training camp or anything like that. It's got to be more than that. It has to be a roster spot. And again, there are changes to that rule.
For sure. Well, that's fantastic, Ray. Thank you. I think we've probably raised more questions.
Probably.
So we may need to revisit this at another time. Everybody knows they can hit us up, parents@ingoalmag.com, and you'll get what advice we can offer as well, and as many questions answered from experts like Ray as we can as well. Ray, thanks so much for taking a few minutes.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Love Razor. Bump into him every now and then at different tournaments, including prospect tournaments. I think I'm the only one that's allowed, that he permits, to call him Razor. And I don't even do it to his face. I just like say, hey, in my head, I'm like, oh, there's Razor. I'll go talk to him. Razor. Ray Petko.
Might have to give it a try.
Steinbeck, Manitoba. Steinbeck, Manitoba.
He's definitely the only Razor from Steinbeck, if indeed that is a nickname that really exists. But we're going to have to try it the next time we see him, see how he reacts. Darren's just making it up as he goes here.
Just a footnote on your conversation with Ray Hutch.
Sure. It was a great conversation. We do bring up that there's often people out there you can turn to for advice in this area, and you should, coaches, managers, and so on. And if you would like, you can get in touch with us, parents@ingoalmag.com. Whether you've got a question about this area or another question that we might bring up on a future parent segment presented by the Stop at You app, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
And you should make some time the first time that you go on the app, on the Stop at Goaltending You app, because you will end up down a rabbit hole before you know it. And all of a sudden, it's like your kids on TikTok. 4 hours go by. Like, what? I just did that, and I did 42 brief lessons, and it's awesome stuff by great goaltenders. Some you know, and some you don't know, but it's a cool way to get exposed to our deeper world of goaltending. Awesome stuff. Every now and then, I think Woody's going to chime in there, and 99% of the time, I'm right.
He does.
he does. And that there's one time every year where he does it. And I'm like, what just happened there? Is he muted? There's a little behind the scenes as we go.
The truth is, I need to start doing some more neurocognitive drills for Sensorina so I can keep up.
Because Woody's like me. He's got the physical tells where he holds up a pen or his hand, or he's nodding and he's leaning into the mic. And I'm like, there we go. This is as we go. The organic part of the podcast. Woody
may have just had an email come in from his bosses about his playoff coverage today that he had to quickly check and might not have been looking at you as he made those motions, and that's why it threw you off.
Interesting when you talk about advancements like the Stop Goaltending You app and what you can learn there. You've got the NHL Sense Arena program that educates you. And over at the hockey shop, Source for Sports, this is telling, like, this is immediate. You guys talked about the sale that was happening over with Cam and Company, and the fact that we'd never heard of the Bauer 960 mask being on sale. I checked it out last night just because I was curious, and I may have been like in the back of my mind, do I pull the trigger just to have one sitting there, just to have one? They're already out of mediums. Like I think there's three left in the store, the Bauer 960 mask. You guys have an impact. Woody, you have an impact.
This is a good lesson, folks. When we start talking about something going on sale at the hockey shop, make sure you act, because I don't know if you've heard, but there's a fair, you know, like, not to give ourselves the, I need the back padding machine.
You just went full Don Taylor there.
Full goalies here, a few goalies out there that listen to the podcast. So the word got out and the 960s are being snapped up quickly. As Darren said, there might be a couple left, but there's always other things on sale as part of that great Bauer sale. So make sure you go check it out.
It is the place to go for everything. Skate sharpening, take your blades in there, get them done up 4 or 5 at a time. Accessories is one of my favorite parts because I'm on the website all the time. But I would do anything to be able to go to Tendy Fest, and hopefully I can make it up. June 15th is the Tendy Fest date for Tendy Fest 6. The gear segment this week, dealing with neck protection. You have managed to sidestep the dangler conversation out of fear of another lecture, but where is your angle with neck protection?
Well, this to me is something that I must have because I don't wear a dangler, so my neck protection better be bloody good, both in terms of skate cuts, we get into that, certified, BNQ certified, what is, what isn't, but also, you know, some of the more advanced foams we're seeing out there, a little more impact resistant foams. You can still get a traditional one that's just a little, you know, HD or SD foam, couple different layers, but we've seen some evolutions there as well. And so we figured we were long past due to catch up with Cam to bring us up to speed on some of the different options, including some sort of that are built into shirts that we happen to see from one of the new Flyers goaltenders. I can't remember actually if it was Fedotov or one of the other kids they brought up. And Jason Mertetis, who does a bunch of broadcast work for the Philadelphia Flyers, sent me a picture of this goalie wearing the sort of shirt with the built-in chest and clavicle protector and said that he just like, this looks great. This is, he loves it. This is what he wants. And I'm like, we just reviewed this last week with Cam. It's the CCM sort of shirt neck protection. So we've got that on this one. One I actually, to be honest with you, wasn't fully aware of. Cam explains them all in this week's gear segment. Welcome back to the Hockey Shop Source for Sports. We're here in Goalie Utopia, surrounded by all kinds of goalie gear and Cam.
And Kevin. Neck guards.
Neck guards. That's what we're doing.
That's exactly what we're doing today.
It's been a day.
It's been a minute.
It has been a while since we've done neck guards. So
exactly.
There's a few things that are new. Some of these we've touched on at various points over the years.
Yes.
Well, I guess we're starting with Warrior because you're holding it up. We've got pretty much every brand and every type. So let me ask you, before we get into one specific one.
Okay.
What are the biggest things you need to know, say, if I've got a young goaltender, youth hockey, minimum requirements, I believe they call it BNQ certified?
BNQ certified.
Okay.
So what that means is that there's ballistics nylon in the actual neckline itself. So that's going to help prevent against that skate cut potential issue.
Okay.
So important for minor hockey, all minor
required
hockey.
Canada and U.S.?
All ages in Canada, for sure. In the U.S., there are some different rules when it comes to neck protection.
Make sure you know what your rules are at your local association before you buy, but that's what they mean by BNQ.
Correct.
With each one of these, we will say yes or no to BNQ. Let's start with the Warrior. Let's go back to the Warrior.
Come on. Yeah, back to the Warrior.
Because you had it first.
Yes.
I've got RX4 because I've got the latest and the greatest because I'm kind of cool like that. Cam's got the old one, RX3. Are there differences?
So they have updated the nylon on the actual RX4 neck guard. But that said, that doesn't mean the RX3 is any slouch itself. So fundamentally, they stayed with a very, very similar design between the two. Reason being is because it worked really well. So if you're looking for something along the lines of similar to a Maltese neck guard and things like that,
that's got really nice thick foam, and I like the segmentation.
Almost the gel style impact.
Feels like it would be, like you said, the Maltese, like something along those lines that used to be custom options only. This is sort of the closest equivalent you can just sort of go buy off the rack, off the shelf here at the hockey shop. Is it BNQ certified?
No.
Okay, so this is more adult and junior.
However, quick note with all of these neck guards, if you do feel like you don't want a certified neck guard, but you still are required to wear, you know, a BNQ certified neck guard, you can always look at wearing one of the player turtleneck undergarments that have the BNQ ballistics nylon in it, and then pop this up and over top, so you will be covered.
Okay, so this awesome. this is our higher end product, but you've got one on sale.
Yes.
Okay, what's next?
Okay, so let's talk about certified neck guard, Power Pro. So this design
There's
itself,
a little turtleneck right there.
That's correct. That's the one.
Kevlar.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Yes. Help prevent against sharp objects. So this design itself has been around for a little while now. Good impact protection. Again, focus on that ballistics nylon up top in that overall neckline itself. You're getting that Kevlar in there as well. So that's giving you that protection against that skate cut. There's a BNQ certified version, which is the Pro, and then the uncertified version is called the Elite.
Okay, so this is kind of, you know, again, not as thick a foam as we were seeing sort of in the Warrior one, just more
different style.
Yeah. Okay. Next.
So Aegis D3O, talking about impact protection. So This is just the Aegis Interceptor. There's also the Interceptor Pro that are available.
I wear that, really like that.
Both are B&Q certified. So if you're looking for something extremely protective with that impact protection and B&Q certified, check out the Aegis neck guards.
Good product.
Okay, on to the next one.
Me?
Sure.
Brian's.
So Brian's has come out actually with a quite nice neck guard in terms of for overall wraparound and impact protection. The only downside, not B&Q certified.
I like the texture.
However, high neckline, very protective. This neck guard kind of reminds me, you know, similar-ish to even almost close to a COVID neck guard, to be honest.
Okay. Thick.
Yes.
That's a thick piece of protection.
That was beefy.
Beefy.
Beefy Brian's.
A little less next beefy? Bond.
7,000 neck guard. You've seen this baby around for a number of years. Rask used to wear one.
Still see it in the show all the time.
Exactly. So pro endorsed, we'll call it.
Yeah.
A couple different colors.
B&Q certified.
Yes. Red, navy, black options. They also have their uncertified line as well, being their V10 Pro Carbon. And again, certified versus uncertified. Up to you. You make your best decision based off of your look rules. Shirts.
Shirt neck guards.
So both of these will give you some additional sternum protection, which is the idea behind both of these styles of shirts. Bonnez carries one, CCM has had one. So CCM has their standard neck guard without the shirt, but they also have their pro neck guard, which includes the shirt and the sternum protection. Again, it's depending on what you're looking for, if you're looking for them or that impact reduction, especially on those chest shots in particular.
B&Q certified.
Both.
Are B&Q certified.
That's correct. Bond 9000.
That's like a mesh, like no truth to the rumor that Cam took the neck guard off this and wore this to the beach with a Hawaii 89 spray painted onto the chest.
What can you say? I just love the beach.
100% I could see you in that.
I love the beach.
Old school, love it, Cam.
If you have any questions, you can give me a call, 604-589-8299 or 1-800-567-7790.
If you just want to see Cam walking around at the beach wearing this with Hawaii 89 paint,
you know where you won't find that, but you will find the neck guards at thehockeyshop.com.
We might try and slip in an image of Cam at thehockeyshop.com one of these days. We're working on it, folks.
Neck guards.
What do you think the percentage is of professional goaltenders who wear the neck protection under their upper body, the clavicle and the neck?
High. Very high.
Like 100%?
I don't know if it's 100, but it's going to be pretty high because I think fewer of them do it around the neck and more about the clavicle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I can't think of people I've seen without it. I don't know.
I'm in all kinds of rooms. I don't know that I've ever seen, like even the days of guys just wearing the old sort of, you know, basic Vaughn are shrinking and shrinking. Guys are looking for the most part for more protection. Like you said, the way these guys shoot, it's about having more foam and more protection, sort of, yes, the neck, but underneath the clavicle area and sort of that double coverage in there for sure. I've seen actually... You know, it's funny, I have seen a lot of the shirts. We made fun of Cam because there's a little mesh to that shirt. You guys know, we're old enough to remember the old Hawaii 85 shirts with the big holes in it.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Beach. Yeah, rocking those. And I've definitely seen more and more of those in the NHL for sure. Like a beefier protection underneath the chest protector. Seen a lot of the custom ones.
Wouldn't have anything to do with making the chest protector sit higher.
No, I've seen a few padded shirts that definitely do that,
both,
including the one that Darren wears to try and make himself look huge when he's skating with the Golden Knights. That Vaughn one adds a cup. That adds at least a good half inch to your shoulder height.
That wasn't a flattering picture I sent to you. That was supposed to be like no trace camping. That was ugly. I sent him
picture. We didn't put it on the socials. The before picture was a lot better than the after picture. Let's put it that
so
way.
So here's the thing about the clavicle protection and those pieces that come up, protect the neck a little bit. I think they're even more important with the modern approach of players shooting from either behind the goal line or down the goal line, short side shelf, and trying to bank it off goalies' heads to lack a better description of the strategy. You're getting pucks that are going off your shoulder and underneath your mask a lot more during games with that than you ever have before.
Fair comment.
To be Yeah, I'd never even thought of that. And honestly, we're seeing it tried in practice as well. Not just by shooters, but by goalie coach. Shout out Ben Vanderklok of the Nashville Predators. I was watching, buddy. I saw that short side shelfer on UC in the drill the other day. It was barring out, though, as he was preparing to celebrate the ultimate short side backhand tuck. It was the shot of shots. It went barring out, not barring in. So he was close. Hell of a shot, Ben.
So just keeping that in mind, we're a dangler. It takes away a lot of opportunities for the pucks to get through. But if you're stubborn like Hutch and Woody, make sure you've got the other protection that's added onto it. And I think if it's not above 95%, then I would be shocked that most guys are wearing that type of protection.
I agree.
I believe.
I can't remember the last guy I saw that didn't have something hanging in his locker room specifically for neck and sort of clavicle protection.
Darren, as you're pointing out the studio that I'm sitting in right now, I should point out that behind Darren, there's a good, I can see 8 different masks hanging on Darren's wall and none has a dangler on it.
Because I take them off to wear them.
Well, they're so important. You should be advertising them, Darren.
I have one dangler in here.
You're right. You're right. And the danglers next never week. Go out of style. Like I've got old, old danglers that are maybe 20 years old.
I want to see on the Golden Knights practice facility with a nice gold, shiny dangler.
Want to be able to
mirrored dangler.
See through it. Although I can't see through anyway. Not very good. Somebody said, do you got a hole in your glove? I'm like, yeah, little hole in the head. Yuri Patera is coming up with our NHL Censorina feature interview. But before we get to that, just a comment as we embark on the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it looks like Boston is going to rotate, at least to start, they're going to rotate. This may change, but it's going to be a planned flip-flop of the two goaltenders throughout the first round. Anybody else? In a boat, I think there's going to be a lot of different goaltenders where we'll see teams play multiple goaltenders. But Boston's kind of on the verge of something where they felt they strayed away from it last year and it cost them. And they're sold and really dialed into it this year. Woody,
I think there's a chance, although they won't commit to it or comment on it publicly. But it seems just reading the tea leaves and sort of the rotation heading into the playoffs. There's a chance you see it in Carolina, too. Freddie Anderson's been fantastic coming back fresh. And after such a long absence, like he deserves a ton of applause. But that's a long time without games. And for him, because of the blood clots, I would imagine a long time without being able to sort of, you know, do a lot of the work physically to get ready to play. Peter Kochetkov has been brilliant in the second half of the season. I could see them going back and forth as well. So we have to wait to see how it all plays out, Darren. But it's nice to see teams at least publicly considering it and using it and embracing the idea that if it worked in the regular season, it can work in the postseason. The teams have been so risk adverse for so long. And listen, like we saw in Reason Why last year, I fully understood why and was on board with, and I still think it was the right decision for the Minnesota Wild to go to Marc-Andre Fleury in game 2. They went multiple overtimes in game 1 with Philip Gustafson. In Dallas, one of the hottest rinks in the league. And so they went to Fleury in game 2. They rotated. They played well all season. The only thing that didn't happen is Flower had an off game. And so, but the way he had played down the stretch in that rotating role, I thought it was the right call there. But the criticism they received for it was the reason we see teams not willing to try it, because you really are putting yourself out there as a coach. I think the fact that it failed the other way for Boston is one of the largest reasons we're finally going to see it.
So it's up to Swayman and Allmark to make this work.
Yep.
For the rest of the goalie union.
Yeah. For any chance to have this carry forward, it's up to Swayman and Allmark.
Yeah, like the weight of a goalie nation and a goalie writer named Kevin Woodley, who has been pitching this idea in columns leading into the playoffs for about 8 years now. Please, boys, do it for me.
It's a good way of avoiding risk in another direction. I mean, obviously,
well, that's what it is this year.
Yeah, well, it's also if you do get to the, obviously you end up with a goaltender who's more rested, which we often talk about as being an important thing. And if, heaven forbid, somebody gets injured, you don't have a guy who's been sitting on the bench for 4 weeks having to come in and desperately win. So you could argue that it is risk adverse, even though any change from what the norm is a greater risk for a coach to take in the eyes of most.
And let's not forget, listen, like to give Montgomery a bit of a break on last year, Linus Allmark was the Vezina Trophy winner, right? And deservedly so. So kind of hard to go away from that guy. They had a 3-1 lead in the series against Florida. He was playing, you know what I mean? So like, I sort of get it as well in terms of why they didn't last year. But the problem was they'd done it all year. So asking him to all of a sudden play 7 in a row when he hadn't all season, you know, that became a bit of a problem. So listen, like this has happened before at other levels. It happens in the American League more than I think we hear about. I think the last team to, I will say it's since 95 was the last one where I remember it being a peer back and forth, no matter what. It was Corey Schwab and Mike Dunham did a peer back and forth rotation all the way to the Calder Cup. But I do think we see a lot more switching at that level because of the schedules back and forth and both goalies being used in a more purposeful fashion than we see in the NHL, and teams win championships down there with it. So I've always sort of wondered, how many, other than Vasilevsky, everybody's needed two for how long now? So why not just use them more purposely rather than waiting in case of emergency break glass situation?
We will have opportunities to discuss this further because it will be a story until Boston wins or is knocked out. There is going to be times where they lose a game, and the question is going to be, will you stick with your rotation or will you ride the next guy a little bit longer? So it's going to be fun. To get through that retirement, an exit from the world of goaltending in the National Hockey League that was announced this week, Woody.
Yeah, and we probably should have had this higher in the show, my bad. Pavel Francouz, who I had the opportunity to meet once, unfortunately. I wish I'd had a more opportunities. Maybe we'll try and get him on the show because it was a real delight. And I was a big fan of him as a goaltender. And I know other goalie coaches were. I thought he was a really good find for the Colorado Avalanche, gave them a lot of good minutes before the health caught up with him a little bit. He announced his retirement this week. I don't want to speak out of turn because I've only seen translations. It sounds like he's going to do some coaching. It sounds like he's going to do some media work at the World Championships. But like I said, because I've only seen translations, it sounds like there was a degenerative situation with the knee. And it was, kind of like Carey, something that he just couldn't play through anymore. But there's a guy that, I know when he started with the Avs, there were other teams around the league, goalie coaches that were like, man, if this guy makes it to free agency, we like this guy's game. And I thought there was a lot to love about his game as well. So patient off the release, so calm, held his edges so well. He just seemed really well suited to where the NHL was going the last couple of years. And so, sorry to see him not be able to continue his career. Just because I really enjoyed watching him play, and also because, obviously that's a tough break for anyone to have to go through. But sounds like he's got some plans on the other side, and maybe we can add him to the show here in the next couple of weeks so he can catch us up in person. Because, like I said, that one conversation we had in the press box here in Vancouver 1 year when he wasn't playing was a real delight, as short as it was.
I would like to have been a fly on the wall for that discussion in the press box. Press box conversations go one of two ways. Either you're looking to get away or they're looking to get away right away, or they end up going on and you miss like a period and a half.
We referenced that conversation in a past episode. We didn't have him on the pod, but we referenced the conversation in a past episode because he recognized the voice.
That's what it was.
He recognized my voice because he was a listener to the podcast, which of course I'm going to talk about because that's a pretty darn cool moment for me, right?
Darn right it is.
Yeah, it was neat. And he was, like I said, he seemed like just a really great guy. And like I said, a hell of a goaltender as well.
All your car commercials in the Lower Mainland with Kevin Woodley from Ingle Magazine. Let's get into our feature interview conversation brought to you by NHL Sense Arena. Yuri Patera from one of the most beautiful places on the planet in Prague. And now he applies his trade in Vegas with the Golden Knights and the Henderson Silver Knights, product of the Western Hockey League by way of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And this is sometimes you got to look under the hood. You don't know much about a guy. And then you discover, boy, this thing is built for speed because there's a lot in here with Yuri.
Yeah, you know what? And I don't want to give any of it away. We'll just get to it. I think the word that I would, If I had to pick one word to describe this, it would be joy.
Yeah.
There's just a pure joy for the position, for learning, for evolution, for the advice he shares in everything he does related to goaltending, for his dad's role in his career. There's just a real knack for watching other goalies and why he loved to watch them. And he shares that joy really openly with us. And it creates a very fun and still informative, enjoyable conversation with Yuri Patera, presented by NHL Sense Arena. It's a beauty. And he seems to be too. Really excited to welcome to the InGoal Radio Podcast first-time guest, Yuri Patera of the Vegas Golden Knights and Henderson Silver Knights. I guess first off, Yuri, just we're kind of winding down the season late in the year. How are things with you? How's the season been? I know there's been a little bit of up and down between Vegas and Henderson. I guess first off, maybe how do you balance that between the two? What are the biggest differences you see?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. And yeah, it's been an up and down season when it's a little bit harder to get in a rhythm when you don't play, many games. You sit out for, let's say, 2-3 weeks, then you get a game, then you get sent down, play a few, get called back up. So obviously it's a little bit harder to stay in, I don't want to say game shape, but just stay in a rhythm. But at the same time, obviously, every time you get called up, you're trying to bring the best to the team. And each game that you get in a game, you're just trying to outwork the other guy on the other side of the ice and trying to get the win. So that stays the same. But yeah, again, it's been a great time up in Vegas when I get called up. And when I'm in Henderson, I just try to work my butt off and just, show that I belong in a big league. And that's my main goal. So, yeah.
What's the biggest difference for you in terms of maybe how it affects your game or how you try not to let it affect your game in terms of the styles of play at the two different levels and the types of chances you might see from the AHL to the NHL?
It's, I would say the speed, obviously it's a little bit faster than the AHL. The players are obviously, there's a lot of skilled players in the American League, but not on the same level, with the same speed. The guys can get a pass to their feet, quickly put it back on their stick. And just under pressure, I find a lot of the biggest difference is guys making plays under pressure. That's the biggest difference for me, seeing that in practice, seeing that in the games, and just some plays that some guys, like McDavid or Draisaitl or just like the top level players, that what can they do with the puck, especially under pressure or two guys on top of them. So that is the biggest difference, I think. And just reading the play, for me, especially reading the play, knowing where all the guys are, let's say on a rush, knowing if there's a one-timer option, if there's a middle lane drive option and all that, just it's a little bit harder. I find it a little bit tougher to read because the guys always try to make the best plays. And yeah, just reading the play, it makes a huge difference for me, especially just going from the American League to the NHL.
Well, that's reading the play is something that ends up being a really hot topic around here. It's something we focus on over on the website with our Pro Read segment. And we're always asking guys like, so for you, it's getting used to the pace of the NHL. How do you get better at it? Like, if it's a strength of your game, how did it become a strength of your game? Outside of just reps and playing, is there anything you've done over the years to sort of get better at connecting those patterns at each level?
Well, obviously, it's a summers and years of hard work, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, I think my big strength is my speed. So I think I'm really, really fast on a lateral plays, which helps me a lot reading before I actually have to move. It's a little bit, I think it's a little bit different for every goalie, right? Every goalie plays a different way. But for me, it was more adjusting to the depth, trying to have a good depth. That also comes from reading a play, right? If you only have a one player coming down on you from the side, there's a defenseman just holding the middle or just pressing it from the middle. He's not going to cut in. You can be a little bit further out. You can be on the top of the crease or maybe, heels on the top of the crease, but in some situation, you obviously got to read it when there's let's say the guy just goes in a corner or he's looking to make a pass. You obviously got to be a little bit mindful of what are the other threats. And just work. I feel like the biggest step I made this year was my depth with reading the play ahead and just knowing where I should be standing in the crease, like on a certain situations, right? Like obviously you don't want to be too high caught up when there's a backdoor play or when there's a rebound coming off your pad or something like that. So you got to play a touch deeper, but also a deep enough to make that first save, right? So it's something in between that I've been kind of working on, and I think I got a lot better at this season as the season went on. And again, that comes with games played, and just the more pugs that go on in that, the more experience I'd say you have in these situations.
Depth, you know, we think of depth as being where you are when a shot's taken, but when you talk about managing that depth, like, does it change when you talk about backing up a little bit? Is sort of that where you are initially? You can still step out if you read an open look? Like, are you starting about an initial depth being a little bit more conservative further back than it would have been in the past?
It's like, so back 4 years, if I go back 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
they mostly wanted me, it was a different goalie coach here in Vegas. They mostly more wanted me to take ice instead of angle, or like take depth instead of angle.
Right.
So that was a really big challenge for me, because me coming out from a Czech league, 18 years old, like I had a lot of good coaches back home, but they would coach us a little bit differently. So here, just like coming, I feel like I wasn't quick enough, which to me was crazy, because back home, I felt like I was the fastest goalie, you know, and just, I was lateral placed. I was really fast, but obviously I was overplaying a lot of plays where I would just do a split for no reason, try to make a huge save, you know, like a save that's relatively simple, make it look big and stuff like that. So I got rid of all of that. And then when Berkey's our coach now, he wants us to be more in the crease, stay controlled and, you know, depth wise in the crease, rather than getting us ourselves in trouble, being on you know, further out, and then you get into trouble for not recovering, or you're scrambling back, or you ended up on your butt, or you know, you start scrambling, you don't know what's happening. So that for me was the biggest jump, just like trying to take away the angle instead of depth. Sometimes you don't have enough time, right, to get on the top of the crease and make a save on a one time that is shot from the hash mark. Sometimes you just need to get what you can get and just try to stay square and react to the shot, which obviously sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're lucky that it hits you. Sometimes sometimes it's a snipe. But at the same time, just that was the biggest jump from when the goalie change happened in Vegas, because it's more just taking the angle and stay in control and increase. Don't panic and just stay very patient, which I think my patience has been very good. But again, like it's another tool that you need to master. So I'm trying to get better at it as well.
Well, that would be very different, right? As opposed to sort of maybe out early and having a little bit of flow to just sitting and waiting. It sounds like it's a really easy thing to do, but as a goalie, we all know how hard it is. Is there anything you've done to sort of help you get comfortable just sort of sitting and holding edges and being patient back there? Because like I said, patience is a really easy word to say, and sometimes in this position, one of the hardest things to pull off.
Yeah, that's right. It's so obviously everything has its pros and cons. If you're further out, you take away more net, but at the same time, you have less time to react to the shot, right? Which when you're a little bit, I don't want to say like deep as Hank played, like Lundqvist played. I can't play like that, or Mike Smith,
or Sean Burke when he played,
or Berkey. But obviously, I'm not as tall of a goalie as, you know, if you compare me to like Vasilevsky or Ottinger or, you know, Bishop. When those guys play, they could play a little bit deeper than I could play right now. But for me, it was just working on it, you know, every practice. And even if you get scored on, it's just it's such a big adjustment. You're trying to master it. And obviously in practices, when let's say you have a drill where you're getting scored on, you obviously don't want to get scored on in a practice, but if you're changing something up, it's a little bit harder to make saves, right? So I'm really happy that we have Freddie and that we have Berkey up top. That, you know, they're gonna tell you you're working on one thing right now. Like, you're eventually gonna get better at it. The fact that you're getting scored on in the practice, like, those are grade A chances that don't happen 30 times in a game, you know? So what I was doing, I was just playing a little bit deeper than I would want to play, just to get a little bit, like a feel for it. And then when the game came, and I would be like 3/4 to the top of the crease, or just a little bit touch under the top of the crease. And I would feel like I'm way too far out. But in reality, I'm like still in the crease, and it, you know, feels good. So that's how I would kind of manage it, or like how I would deal with it. Cause it was, again, it was a big adjustment. So I was very aggressive goalie, and I would try to be heels to the top of the crease. And, you know, these last 2 years kind of changed a little bit. So just still trying to get better at it. Still not perfect, obviously, but I feel it's getting there. So
That's some great advice. And I think great advice for coaches, right? Because as a goalie, when you get into those practice situations, it's so nice that the goalie coaches are communicating that to you. Cause I think at younger years, you're worried about the head coach sort of watching all these pucks go in. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is
great. Cause you know, obviously it sucks, right? Like, let's say you get called up and like you let in like 4 goals on 4 shots and you're like, oh, like the coaches are looking or whatever. But at the same time, like, they're seeing all the good saves that you're making in a practice. Like, obviously, every goalie's not going to make I haven't seen a goalie make every single save in a practice, right? Like, it's a harder thing to do. Obviously, the shooters are the best in the world. You're trying to get to be the best in the world in your position. So, but yeah, again, if you're trying to get better at it, you're not going to be perfect at it the first 5, 6, 7 times you try, right? Like, it's going to take some time to adjust to it and get better at something.
You mentioned goalie coaching growing up. I'm curious, right? Because we've seen a lot of great goalies, more and more coming, like yourself, coming from the Czech Republic. What's it like back home? The support, the infrastructure for young goaltenders. How did you get started, and when did it become serious where you sort of had some of those voices helping you out?
So I started, my dad actually didn't like that I was a goalie because he was a forward. He was a forward, and growing up, he obviously wanted to raise a forward. And I got into the net because I was going to to practice with my mom, and my mom didn't really, you know, she was just like, oh, just let's have him fun. If he wants to be a goalie, I'll just let him be a goalie. After like six months go by, my dad takes me to practice, and because my dad had his hockey still, so his season was still going on, so he didn't really have much time to take me to practices. And then he figured out that I'm a goalie, and he was not happy, and he tried to get me out. We went on the ice. I think I was like 8 or 9 years old. He would take me in the backyard, and he would start shooting like a tennis balls in my head and my helmet. And he tried to get me out. I was just like, I knew he was doing it on purpose right away. But anyway, I started when I was like 9. I started in goal when I was like 8 or 9 years old. Fully, you know, you're kind of like switching. You're going in and out. Sometimes you're a forward, sometimes you're a D. And then I kind of stuck with it. I thought, I guess, I outplayed all the other goalies. And I just stuck with it. And I had a really good coach back in the day that he was a photographer, but he was a really good friend of Dominic Hasek. And so we would have him coach us at a young age, when you're like, probably from like 8 years old to like 13 or 12 years old, something like that. But we would be doing the old school, you know, like stack the pads and stuff like that, like the poke check and like a sprain, like this old school, goalie practices, in my opinion. We didn't really think anything of it. We were just doing it. Then I had a goalie coach. Then I had a different one from like age of 14 to like, I'd say 18. And I was still, every time I would, even when I got back from the North America, I would always skate with him. And I'd say for me, it's, again, I changed my style in the last year or so, or 2 years, so much that it's a little bit different than what they were coaching back home. They coached me to be very, you know, very aggressive, like hard pushes, strong pushes, and just, you know, strong stops. and just being very, very aggressive and being just, you know, play the, I really like to play the puck because my dad always encouraged me to, you know, if you're ever going to play in the NHL, like you need to know how to handle a puck. So it's just like, as and from the young age, I try to go behind the net, play the puck. So in case they have these two goalies that are on the same level, they'll be like, oh, this guy can play the puck. You know, like always have something up. And yeah, I think it's hard to say what the goalie coaches were coaching. I think that I had good coaches as like people that they had. I think I was a very hardworking kid where the coaches, sometimes they had to be patient with me, but I always did what the coaches were telling me, right? So if they told me, you know, we want you to be doing a shuffle here or a T-push here, I would be just doing it. And then as I was doing, I would just get better and better at, you know, what they were telling me. And then I was just like, I think I had one bad coach where I was like kind of rattled a little bit. And then my dad told me, he's like, just take all the good things from every coach that tells you and just try to piece them together. And if there's something that you don't agree with, just, you know, just work, do whatever works for you. And yeah, that's what I've been doing pretty much my whole career, like since I became a goalie, just trying to be a good listener and just trying to listen, just try to do whatever the coach tells me. And the coaches, I'd say the coaches back home were hard on us, very hard on us. They wanted us to work very hard. If you got scored on 5-0 goal and you wouldn't go down, they would be like looking at you like, you know, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're not trying. Pretty much, you're not trying. It's not like, now it's like you're trying to read the stick. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't work. But back, you know, when you're 15, 14, they're looking at it like, oh, this kid's not trying. So obviously I wanted to make every single save in the practice. I was rattled when I had a practice when you're not having your day. So I was really upset about those practices, especially, you know, like your dad is watching. You want to impress your dad on every practice. And my dad would come watch every practice. So yeah. And obviously I think my dad's been really, really hard because I needed it. Right. I think every kid needs it. To be, you know, to work. And obviously I had my times where I would be cocky. Sometimes I had like a couple of good games and I was cocky. And then my dad would just immediately like make sure that I know, you know, that's not the way to behave and all that stuff. So I think that kind of all comes together. Like all the coaches that, you know, my dad was always like, make sure he works hard, to the goalie coaches, like, make sure he works. Like, If he wants to play hockey, like, don't let him do it like half-ass, you know?
Yep.
And yeah, that kind of worked for me. And I never really had problem with, like, I'd say discipline. So, you know, when the coach told me to do something, I always did it. And I always try to keep the happy face on it, even if I didn't like it. But yeah, I think that all kind of comes all together, just my dad being hard on me and just my goalie coaches being patient with me at times. And just, you know, they also were hard on me, but into a certain level. But yeah, that kind of all comes together for me.
It's funny because you mentioned your dad didn't initially want you to be a goalie, but now, if I understand correctly, does your dad like paint your masks now in the NHL? Can you tell me how that came to be? Is he an artist? Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. So first it started off when I first got my mask. So I had my first mask ever. I always played with a player's helmet till I was like probably 11 years old. Then I got my first mask. I don't know if the timeline's right. I don't know. But I got my first mask and he was putting like stickers on it, but not like stickers where you put like one sticker and like, he would put like the whole helmet, like he would wrap it in like a certain, how do you say, like a wrap foil kind of. And he would have to cut it out in a certain way. And like, you know, that he would put like, I play for Slavia Prague, so it would be just red and white and a little bit of black, just a little bit. And then I don't even know when that started, but he did it for like 3-4 years. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to start painting your helmet. I'm like, all right, like I didn't, you know, like when you're a young kid, I didn't really think anything of it because you're like, you know, like my dad would like figure out someone else like who would like paint it for me. So now, but now when I'm older, I'm like, thank God, like my dad does it, because he's just like, you know, I come home and he don't like, I come home, I'm like, what would you think would look good on the helmet for next year? He gives me all the ideas. I tell him what I kind of want to do. And he's like, yeah, I don't really like that idea. I'm going to come up with something else. And he has just so much time and he only does it for me. So it's just, it's so nice that I don't have to like deal with it in the summer or like I have two helmets for the season all the time. He paints. But yeah, I think it started when I was like 16. He first started painting it and he's doing an amazing job. Every time I like see it, I'm like, just like, holy, like, I can't believe that my dad did it. And he takes his time. Like he's trying to make it look really good. And this last year I asked him to do a silhouette on my chin of the mask, like a Vegas one over here and a Prague one. And he was just like, he's like, there's no chance. Like I'll be able to do it. Like I'm losing my sight. I need glasses for this stuff. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to do it. Next week, I come back home. He's like, I did it. But, like, I don't think it looks very good. I look at it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that looks amazing. Like, I could not picture it better. I'm grateful that he's doing it. He said that this season was the last year he's doing it. He also said it 3 times before that. So I think I can get him going hopefully till my 30s.
I love Yuri. That is an awesome story. So who was it? So your dad obviously had a big influence on you, just, you know, pushing you to excel and all those things. And I think that might be the neatest mask story we've had. And I'm 20 plus years into this. I've heard a lot of good ones. That might be the best one. Who is your guy? Like you mentioned Hasek and, you know, somebody who knew him or a friend of his being an early goalie coach. Like, is he automatically the guy growing up or were you watching guys in the NHL and imitating them? You know, how did that work growing up? Who did you want to be when you were a young kid playing goal?
So I had like two phases. One where I only knew one name for Montreal. It was Jose Theodore.
Yeah.
But that was when I was really, really young. And then when I grew up a little bit, I started watching the NHL. My favorite guy was When Semyon Varlamov and Michael Neuber got hurt in Washington and Braden Holtby entered in the league and just watching him. And also Ovi was still is my favorite player. Like growing up watching, I always cheer for him and just watching those two together and like Holtby kind of breaking into the league in that season was just unbelievable. And my dad always, he was a big Caps fan as well. So he loved watching Capitals and he was just like, oh, like, look at this goalie. Like he's a rookie. I'm just like, oh really? Like, I don't even know what that means, but that's cool. And he's just like, yeah, like, this is his first year in the league. And he's just standing on his head. Like he's unbelievable. And he, you know, he had that stretch where like, he was just like unbelievable. I could not believe he had those sick Reebok pads. And he was just like his style. Like, I was just like, dude, like this guy's sick. And then obviously Carey Price was the, in my opinion, best of them all. Technically, unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. I think he has the best glove ever in the NHL. He had a sick glove. And obviously you see guys like Lundqvist. I really like Henrik Lundqvist. Carey Price, Braden Holtby was my favorite. And honestly, I went through phases where I was cheering for Quickie in LA. Oh, there you go. I went through phases where I was really cheering for LA in 2012 and 2014 to win the Cup. So I was really a big fan of Quickie. And then just him actually being a Golden Knight for a little bit and me backing up for him for good period of time and him like, you know, being on the bench for me for my two games was unbelievable. You know, like I still can't believe that actually happened, just watching this guy and go for 2 Stanley Cups in 2 years or 3 years and then he's sitting behind me on the bench, you know, just it was a crazy, crazy thing to kind of wrap my head around. And but yeah, those four guys. Obviously, there's a lot of really good goalies that I like to watch, but those four guys, I'd say, stand out for me.
did you, like, when you're watching them, is just cheering them? You talked about the style.
I love their style. I just love how Holby was like so compact, like so compact. Like, for it was his first year in the league, and I know, I understand that he was already like, he was my age, like 24, 25, but he, or maybe younger a little bit, but he was just, he just looked like a complete goaltender to me. He was just like, he was always square on the puck. He was always like, his pushes were so strong. Like, I know that he was overdoing a T-push a little bit, but at the same time, I was just like, this guy's so quick. Like, he was always square on the shooter. He was always ahead of the play. And just like his selection of saves was just, I don't know why. I thought it was just awesome to watch him.
What about playing with Quickie, like getting a chance? Because with us, he's pretty quiet. Like, he doesn't say much with the media. I loved watching him play too. But I know, like, he's passionate and he's a great teammate, and he's, you know, he thinks the position. Like, he'll talk goaltending when you get into it. Did you have a chance to pick his brain? Like, you're not gonna play the same way, but was there anything you could take from him?
We did have a conversation. I think it was during the playoffs last year when we were in Dallas. And he started looking at my pads, and he's just like, man, like, they're like, do you like these pads? And I'm like, yeah, like, I get two sets of them, or like three sets a year. Like, I can't say anything bad about Bauer. Like, I love their pads. And just like, yeah, like, I just don't, you know what? Like, I would want to try them, but like, I just don't think they would fit my style of play, you know? Like, and I'm just like, well, yeah, like, it's, you obviously play a little bit different than me, but I'm like, I would love to see you try them on at least once. They're like, you know, like, why not? And then he was just like, yeah, I haven't changed my pads since pretty much, like, I don't think he changed his pads since, like, they won the cup. Because he was like, yeah, like, I just keep, you know, the original strap. Like, he still has the original straps. You know, like, how we have the Velcro ones now? Like, all the goals have just the Velcro.
Yeah, he's got leather and buckles, and he's got them cranked tight.
Oh, he was in the leather buckles, and he was just telling me, he's like, yeah, like, I don't think I'll be able to go, like, I would be able to adjust to a different pad right now, because, you know, I know he was just like, I know that my style is not really working for me, like, this year, but, you know, like, that's the only way I can play. And I'm just like, well, what are you talking about? Like, you're making unbelievable saves. And look at him now in the Rangers. Like, he's having a crazy good season. He's still playing the same way. And he's just – I love watching Quickie. Every game that he plays, I love watching. Like, I know that he loves doing, like, his splits, but he always – like, 90% of the time, he always makes a save on that. And he's just – I don't know. Like, he's been one of the guys that I grew up watching. And just then again, like, sharing a locker room with him, sitting next to him in the stall – and just, again, like, those last two games I played with him, I played with him a little bit more, but the two games that I've played, and him just, like, you know, we're in St. Louis, and I'm going for my first NHL game, and I'm nervous as f-. Like, I'm like, this is happening, right? And he just comes up to me, and he's like, you know, just have fun, man. Like, have fun. No biggie, just another game. Have fun. Enjoy the moment. Like, first game only happens once. Like, just make sure you enjoy the moment and, like, have fun out there. I was just like, that put me in such a great, like, mental zone. I was like, oh, man, like, I have this Hall of Famer telling me just to go out there and have fun. Like, all right, like, I'll do that. And then, yeah, the game ended up – we ended up winning 4-3. And it was a great game. And Quickie came up to me and after a game, I just remember even all the guys, you know, just like coming up to me and being happy for me and just seeing all those smiles and just like, you know, kind of trying to realize that it's all happening. And then you have a 2-time Stanley Cup champion, a Hall of Famer, just hugging you there after a game, you know, just telling you had a great game. I was just like, holy, like, couldn't wrap my head around it. It was unbelievable. And also, like, Quickie's such a great guy. Like, and I was, you know, like, you see all these guys on the TV and you don't know, like, how they are as a person. And I met Quickie, I'm just like, God, like, this guy's just an ultimate beauty, just like on and off the ice, you know, just some great person.
I love it. It's great when your heroes turn out to be everything you hope they would be, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like it's different. Like soccer, you see all these soccer players just like how good they are, and then they act like kids. Like they act like they don't do anything for the fans. They don't care, you know. And this guy would just like stop, just, you know, fist bump everyone even after a loss. And that's what my dad always taught me. He's just like, if you wanna be a good sport and like you're entertaining people, you always have to fist bump the fans no matter you win or lose. So obviously sometimes it's you lose in a certain way and when you're really not happy with it. But I feel like the fans should always, you know, like deserve a little love, you know, like they're there to cheer for you and support you. And if you just give them, it's just, you know, it's just a little fist bump. And like, they just showed me that what a great guy, like Quickie was. So
that's awesome. Hey, listen, last one I got, because I know I got to let you go because of the guy that I'm about to ask you about. You've been working with Pete for a while now. How's he helped you with mindset? And how's that been important to you this year as you're bouncing up and down between the two leagues?
It's been really important, especially, you know, when even if you don't have a great game, you have an off game or you have an off practice. I like to chat with him, even if I have like an off practice or, you know, he's always in a great mood, always positive, which almost makes me try to be like that, you know, and just, you know, just it's the simple things like you're working to not look at the shot clock, not look at the score the whole time, the whole game, pretty much just being in your focus mental zone. And just, again, like I went through a stretch last year where I was really not happy with what was going on with my playing time. I didn't really play much because of whole LB, Lauren Brusselaar situation that when he got sundown. So I wasn't really happy. So I kind of wish I would have had him last year because I was really going through a tough time. And now looking back at it, if, you know, it's just like, why would you worry about something when you can't control? And then at the same time, why can't you have a smile on your face even when you're not doing good? There was a thing that really, like, in when the last game I played in Nashville, I had a great two periods, or I'd say 52 minutes of the game. And, you know, last 8 minutes don't go as you want, ended up losing in overtime. And I was just like, yeah, like obviously the confidence wasn't there yet. I'd say the confidence wasn't there yet in the last little bit of the like 5 minutes of the game or whatever, because obviously, you know, the team's humming right now and you haven't you just got scored on 3 goals and like whatever 9 shots or whatever. But he was just like, yeah, like that's the best time to start smiling and just, you know, why would you be upset? Why would you get mad? Just smile and, you know, just show that nothing can affect you. Like, so what? You just got scored on 3 goals. So what? Like, the game's still on. You can still put on a great performance. And then, yeah, just like doing these, even though day to day, just like those daily things where I'm just trying to, when I'm trying to be positive in hard situations when it's, when, you know, sometimes you go through adversity and it's really hard to be positive. So that really helps when you have someone like this that can always, even if you're fading into the frustration a little bit, they can always bring you into the positivity, helps you and like tries to master it for yourself too. So you can control where, you know, not to get frustrated, not to get upset when you're not playing and when the things are not going your way. You always just have to look forward and always just have to, in my opinion, just like always try to stay positive. So that he's been a great, a big part of my success this year. And again, if there's, I can't think of a more positive guy than Pete. So he's been the greatest asset I added this season. So I'm really happy for him.
Last one on him. Like he talks about manufacturing confidence. A lot of us are like, oh, how do we get confidence? Have you felt that when you talk about being positive? Is that part of what you mean? Like able to create your own confidence? Is it a real thing? Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to come from making saves. You can manifest it.
Exactly. Yeah. You manifest it. And that's why he has his website where you can just go on there and you can use the confidence anchoring where you can just, You know, you have your every goalie has their own specific movement that they do that kind of like gives you all the confidence back, or you know, kick it up a little bit. And that helped me a lot, especially, you know, bounce back, I think is huge for the goalies, right? Like, especially if you, let's say start of the game, like I think I had a lot of games this year where I don't make two saves at the start of the game, let's say first 10 minutes, and not ended up getting scored for the rest of the game, you know, like making all the saves after. So the bounce back, I think, has been the biggest improvement for myself this season, because in previous years when I would get scored on two goals like quick, I would just be like, oh damn, like what do I do now, like I need to like change something real quick, instead of just, all right, let's reset, just whistle goes and here we go again, focus on the next puck and just read in a play again. And just sometimes, you know, when you're not doing well, or when you're getting scored on, or things are not going your way, you're trying to change something when maybe something, you think maybe something's not working, but maybe it's just something, just a very minor, instead of making like a big adjustment. You can just, you know, that's why I love talking to Pete. That's why I'm glad that Freddie Brathwaite is the way he is. Again, like a great coach, even better person. So I'm really happy for those guys that I have them, you know, in my career, in my life, and then that I can chat with them about anything pretty much, you know, like if I don't like something, I can tell them that. If I'm happy with something, I can also tell them that. And I know that, you know, they're going to help me out. So
I love it. I love it. Confidence anchors. It's good to hear. It's good to hear that it's working at the highest levels of the game too. Yuri, thank you. I don't want to keep you away from it, but I can't thank you enough for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation. Can't wait to have more of them down the road when you're back up here in Vancouver with the Knights.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Okay, there's multiple places to respond to there. His relationship with John the Quick, and just the fact that John the Quick was giving him a hug after his first win and backing him up is a like a fanboy type moment that we all would admit happens, but we don't usually hear from the athletes themselves. But his dad's role in this, when he found out that he was going to be a goaltender, taking him to the backyard and shooting pucks at his head, and Yuri realizing he's doing it on purpose. I gotta toughen this out. But there's another story that Yuri told me, because I obviously work with Vegas, and Yuri and I have had a chance to have some cool conversations, been on the ice together at times. But they played in a summer tournament, like a men's league tournament one year. And Yuri was 16 or 17, and it was all of his dad's friends. And Yuri let in a couple of pucks, and his dad was giving it to him. And all of his dad's friends were coming by going, it's okay. It's all right. But his dad was the one that was giving it to him. And the cool, they have a great relationship, but dad's a hockey player and wanted but best for his kid. He's been around, and maybe playing goal wasn't the most peaceful way to enjoy our sport. But I thought that was funny too, that all of his dad's friends were picking him up and dad was giving it to him. So what was your favorite part, Woody?
For me, it was the mask painting. Yeah. I mean, I'd heard about it at the Winter Classic. Obviously, he was up with Vegas for the Winter Classic, and I was there down in Seattle. I saw you, Darren, which was the highlight of my season so far, by the way. But the second highlight was Yuri talking about, hey, like his, because he couldn't get a Winter Classic mask because his dad paints all his masks, and the turnaround was too tight because he wasn't originally supposed to be on the roster. And I was just like, what do you mean your dad paints your mask? I thought that was a really, really neat story. And again, just speaks to that joy and that sort of, There's just a pureness to it that put a giant smile on my face.
We see goaltenders with initials of their family all the time, or tributes to their family all the time. But to have your dad paint your mask, that tells me that Hutch should start doing some YouTube research on painting little Maddie's mask.
Stick figures, baby. Start simple.
There's no chance I'm doing it now, but I've already done it. One of the great memories for me, I was telling Matthew, back before people I don't know if anybody has really painted the old, you know, helmet and cage combo except Hasek, and his wasn't technically a helmet. It was custom made. It looked like a helmet. I came back from school one day and my father had taken my helmet and completely done it up with custom cut stickers and so on. He is not an artist. It's just something he decided to do. And it was before it was done by anybody. And it was a cool, cool memory for me. So I did the same thing for Matthew one time. And he still has that mask sitting on his shelf and it will remain in his collection forever. He was telling me just the other night after listening to Yuri Patera.
That's
cool. I love it. That's awesome.
Can we borrow that for your shelf with your new background at some point so we can see it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll see. Maybe it'll make an appearance next week.
I like those pads over here.
Put it on and start shooting at his head.
Yeah. Can we do that at Tandy Fest?
I also have pictures of Matthew in the backyard wearing nothing but a helmet and gloves and his junior A billet brother firing pucks at him. And he was about 10 years old at the time. So of course, I let it happen.
Oh, you were there and you let it happen?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Quality parenting there.
Yeah.
I've made a number of questionable decisions, as we all have.
That's I'm glad you're mentioning it now because the statute of limitations have probably expired on that.
He still loves the position, so it couldn't be all that bad.
Good point. Hey,
Darren was thinking more of the call to child services that was coming.
Might have been. But you're okay. It's fine. He's not going to testify against you. Loves you. Great bond. We got to fly. I'd love to go on about this, but we got to fly. Hey, we're on the verge of the Stanley Cup playoffs, really kicking into high gear as we get the first couple of games out of the way and not out of the way, but really get our teeth into these first games in the opening cities and looking forward to Vancouver hosting a game for the first time since 2015 in a series.
9 years, baby. 9 years without playoffs for me in this town. I've covered them for other teams in other cities, but 9 years. I'm looking forward to see the original Towel Power here in Vancouver. We literally the only franchise in the National Hockey League that has a statue in front of their building of a guy waving a white towel of surrender. Of course, Roger Nielsen.
Not just a guy.
Pretty cool tradition nonetheless.
And two great coaches. You're going to have a fun series there with Andrew Burnett and Rick Tocchet. Looking forward to that. Enjoy Hutch. Enjoy Woody. And you at home, thank you for listening. Appreciate your support. And come back next week for more on our journey of goaltending on In Goal Radio, the podcast.